We look after the community. It's people that live in Manchester that make it.
Meet Julie Twist. Julie founded Manchester's first city centre estate agency. When she started Julie Twist Properties in 1994, only around 600 people were living in the city centre, and the city was extremely different then. Today, more than 60,000 people call Manchester city centre their home. And Julie played a massive role in creating spaces for people to live because she saw potential where nobody else did. I met up with Julie in one of her rental properties, a modern development inside a beautiful 160-year-old listed building with high ceilings and existing features. It's a perfect example of how she's brought life back into Manchester. When she was starting out, Julie wanted to make Manchester a 24-hour city, and there's no doubt she's had a hand in that. So I wanted to know, what was it like to be a female pioneer in Manchester? How do you create a strong community where there wasn't one before? And after 30 years, what has Julie learned from marketing homes to people in the city centre? I'm Lisa Morton, and this is We Built This City. Julie, welcome to We Built This City.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us. And so you're an adopted Manc. You were born in Lee, but you've been treading the streets of Manchester for a very, very long time now.
I'm feeling my age as well.
But we're just celebrating 30 years of Julie Twist Properties. So we'll talk about that, which is an incredible achievement. But first of all, just tell us how you actually got into the property industry in the first place.
Gosh, it was by chance, really. I was still at school, retaking my O-levels and working in a supermarket. And a solicitor from Manchester lived in the local village, called in to see me, well, not to see me, actually, to do his shopping, and was chatting away, what did I want to do? And at that time, I hadn't got a clue. And he said, would you like a job? I need somebody in the office, literally as an office junior at his solicitor's practice. So I thought, you know what, I'll do it. And rang up the owner of the supermarket that evening and said, I've got another job, I won't be in tomorrow. And I think if somebody did that to me now, I would be horrified. But they took it well. They did try to keep me, so I must have been okay. And I started the next morning and went in with him. At that point, I couldn't drive, so I had to quickly think on my feet. I was nearly 17, and on my 17th birthday, my parents got me a crash course to drive on driving lessons. So I took a week off and passed my test very, very quickly.
That's amazing. So were you driving then from home into Manchester?
Every morning, yeah.
You then went to work at the solicitors. What did you do after that? How did you get
I worked my way through the solicitors, yeah. And I did a little bit of court. I did reception work. It was a good background, really, for me to start there because it taught me the etiquette of business. From there, they then built a property department, Altrincham, Levenshulme, and then in Manchester City Centre. I actually worked with Mike Groves, who was with Thornley Groves, and the two of us did the property department there. I worked in Levenshulme for a while, which was quite busy, and I worked in Altrincham, which was absolutely gorgeous. We had some lovely properties to see. Everyone wanted to sit down and have a cup of tea for an hour and have a chat, and that really wasn't me. I needed the speed. And then Manchester started, and I just never looked back, never wanted to move away. The pace was brilliant, although there wasn't a lot here. And they decided that the property department wasn't working because there wasn't enough happening. And it was do it yourself or move on to other things. And that really pushed me in a direction that I had to go my own way and do it. And my parents were very, very supportive and just said, you know, give it a go. We're right behind you. So it was all hands to the deck and a family affair to get the place going.
So what year was that when you set up in?
That was 1994. For 3 years then, there were no other agents in Manchester. So I had the run of it. And I think a lot of people looked at me as though I was stupid. I had to name the company Julie Twist Properties because people knew me from the solicitors. And the only way I could think of attracting people to come and use my business was to know it was me that was there. So that name's kind of stuck. And a lot of people remember it. I think now I'm absolutely fed up of seeing my name everywhere, but it is a name that you don't forget.
So how old were you when you set your business up?
I was 23.
Unbelievable, because I can remember, because I set my business up in 96, and it was 1 month after the IRA bomb, but I did know you then from my previous company. And not only were you a pioneer, but you were a young female pioneer, which obviously I was kind of so impressed by. But how was it back then for you as a business person, as a businesswoman in Manchester at such a young age, when there's nobody else even doing what you were doing?
Well, it was a very male-dominated industry as well. So wherever I went, it always seemed to be males. And a little bit daunting, really. But I think I'd got the bit between my teeth and there was no stopping me. I had a really good team that started working with me that were quite a bit older than me, and they all supported me so well. And I was just a sponge, literally learning as much as I could and self-taught. And I probably learned more in the first few years of running my own business than I learned all the time I was at school.
Yeah, sure. And so what was it like then? You set your business up. Were you on Deansgate from the start?
I was on Deansgate, yeah. I was at number 263 and then I moved to number 249 and then I moved to number 237 and I'm now at number 332.
So it's 30 years on Deansgate.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And you just obviously, it was a momentous day when I actually was on the corner when your builders are putting your sign up not longer, a couple of days ago. Yeah. So I thought, it's incredible 30 years.
Yeah, it has been. Gosh, and what a change really in Manchester. There's so much happened and it's just so different. The property industry in Manchester is so different because when I first started, people didn't live in Manchester. They literally owned a property in Manchester to live in during the week, go home at the weekends. And it was a ghost town. And they used a property in Manchester as a hotel, not as a home. And that's what's grown over the years to actually get a city centre community. That's the nice thing, really. And I think that's the biggest change that I've seen.
Well, let's just go back to 1994 and what Manchester was like then, because there was a few hundred people in the city centre and it was pretty much shut, wasn't it, after 6 o'clock, unless it was the weekends and you were clubbing.
Oh, it was. It's the other way around now, isn't it? It's busier in the evening. But yeah, it was dead. People, like I say, only came into Manchester to work.
Given the fact that you were the first for 3 years, you know, how emotionally were you feeling? Were you just really excited or were you nervous? It was completely uncharted territory. You were terrified.
Yeah. I remember the first day that I started and I'd been with the solicitors where there was a big group of people. And I remember going into my office and putting my makeup on when I got to work by myself, making my brew by myself, sitting down at my desk by myself. I was literally, my mum was helping me to start with. She was answering the phone. So she came in a bit later and the two of us were there. I booked my own appointments. I did my own appointments. I did everything myself. And it just seemed so, so strange. It soon changed. But I mean, when I first started, we didn't even have the World Wide Web.
I know.
We didn't even have, you know, when people start saying the World Wide Web, what on earth is that?
A dial-up email at some point
after never work, you know. We didn't have email. We used to have post-it notes. Mm-hmm. We didn't have, I think we just about had mobile phones.
I know my kids can't believe I set a business up, a communications business, without the internet. And we used to have to, if we're doing like financial results, we used to have to retype the facts that came into us and then send that out to journalists, like thousands of words.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, we used to have the Manchester Evening News because we used to do paper copy every week. But to do that, we had to have a mini print, which was a proper photograph that we had to obviously go out, take the photographs, send the reel off to the photographers who would get it back in about 3 days. We'd stick the photograph on with an advert and we'd run down to the Manchester Evening News with it. I think it was a Wednesday it had to be with them. Every single week, that was a full day's job just to get an advert in a paper.
Wow, I don't know how we coped.
No, we did it the hard way.
We did. How much of a catalyst was the bomb, would you say, for that?
Oh, wow. I mean, that just made such a difference. And when you look at the dates that everything happened, it all started to happen in 1996.
Mm. Do you remember, obviously, Sir Bob Scott, who was doing all the Olympic, you know, we had the two Olympic bids, didn't we?
Yeah.
That also really helped put Manchester on the map.
There was so much. And I think the time about when the bomb went off, was that not when we'd got the football, the Euro football was here at the time as well. And I remember the morning of the bomb because I was actually in work that day. And I can remember ringing my mum up saying, wow, Manchester's got such a buzz. There's so much going on because there was it was busy. It really was busy. And there were helicopters going all over ahead. And then we heard that there was a bomb. So I rang home and I said, not really thinking for 1 minute that a bomb would ever go off. If a bomb goes off, we'll just go down to the basement. So come and find us. And within the hour, the bomb had gone off. And the front windows of where we were big panes of glass. And it was as though someone had just pushed the glass and you could literally feel the glass moving. The front doors shook like they were like you've never seen, as though a young child was stood at the other side shaking them. And we went outside and saw this huge big plume of smoke and people running down Deansgate, like a swarm of bees running down Deansgate towards us. So we shut the office straight away and everyone got out. I got in my car and a lady jumped in the car with me with a purple rinse on and said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to go and do some viewings at Salford Quays because I had some viewings booked in. I'm coming with you. So I said, well, where do you live? She said, I live over the other side, but I just want to get out of Manchester. Oh. So I took her in my car and just dropped to her. I can't even remember where it was now and just dropped her. But it was like that. Just wow. Help anybody to get out, yeah. Really.
It definitely, I remember that time in my career, as I say, a month after I set the business up, that really propelled public and private sector to work together. And I think that was the start of the kind of modern Manchester for me, which I've been part of.
Absolutely, definitely. Mm. Yeah, I mean, and it actually, I think, put Manchester more on the map than ever, that people started to look at it and know that it was the time to invest in the city because a lot of London developers came up to Manchester then and started to redevelop the buildings and look at the buildings and, with a different light, I think.
Mm. And what was the first scheme that you worked on?
The first scheme I worked on was Sally's Yard, and that was Tom Bloxham. And that was a lovely little building. So we sold those. There were 10 in there. That was great fun. And then we did Smithfield Buildings for Tom and Britannia Mills. So it was very local people at the time that were selling. Then we started on the Grand Hotel. That was a good one. And the lovely thing about my job is that I tend to go into buildings before, during and after and see them. Whereas, you've got to have an eye for how things are going to look. And I think as an agent, I tend to sit very often with the architects and put my view forwards as how a purchaser would want to live with something, not how a designer would like to design something. It was a great time in my life, really. We had about 11 sites at one time where we had site offices and people sat on them selling, and things were selling like nobody's business. It was unbelievable. I don't think we'll ever see that time again and the growth that we've seen over this period of time in housing anyway.
So going back to the Grand then, we worked on the Grand with you and we won some awards for that, for the Grand actually. It was the old hotel. It was a beautiful refurbishment. We managed to, between us, we had people queuing and camping on the streets overnight, didn't we? And then going out and making sure they got cups of tea and some breakfast in the morning. Yeah. So exciting. But people were coming through that building and literally having a tour around the building, sitting down and signing on the dotted line there and then, like a conveyor belt, wasn't it? I mean,
that was the start of it, really. And I think people were realising that they were buying something. And a lot of people were coming up from London as well then and realising that buying in Manchester was far cheaper. And they could buy two for the price of one. So that's what started to happen. I mean, when I first started talking about prices, the prices for a price for one bed was about 45,000.
Weeps.
I wish I'd bought a lot, but I didn't. That's what people were doing. They were buying and they were seeing that that was where the investment needed to be.
And what about, so I remember the early days, it seemed to be mostly refurbishments of old, for the mill buildings. That was the first kind of tranche, wasn't it, of development. When did the new build really start? The new build that we see now? I mean, there's a new tower seems to be going up every day now.
Yeah. I mean, that has been more recent, really. I think it was probably Beetham Tower. Well, number one, Deansgate was the first one. And then Beetham Tower was one of the larger ones. We always thought that was the largest. And you look now, it's actually fades into insignificant. Yeah, that was probably around, was that about 2006?
Beetham.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But you're right. I mean, I remember driving in from Chester Road, and obviously we've always done a lot of real estate work, and while all the cranes were in the sky, I'm thinking, thank God I can feed the kids. Yeah. And then obviously then we had the property crisis, didn't we? And there was suddenly no cranes, and that really scared me. But yeah, Beetham Tower has kind of, there's divided opinion on Beetham Tower to start off with because it was the first high rise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now I was in my daughter's apartment yesterday and you look across the city and it's a city of towers, isn't it now?
Yeah. I think I noticed the biggest difference personally was when we came back from lockdown.
Yeah.
And the work had carried on while everybody was at home working, and things just seemed to come out of the ground that you didn't even realise were going to be there.
Yeah.
And even working in the business, the speed in which things were happening, it was hard to keep up with.
And what's your view on the density of the build? Are we losing the sense and the heritage of Manchester with some of this, do you think?
I think it's a very difficult question. I personally like the boutique, the smaller ones, the character. I like the old buildings. I like to see the architecture. But you drive into Manchester and you see from a distance and you see the skyline, and it's quite impressive. And I think, you know, you look at other cities around the world, the skyline is what people go there for. So it's got to be a mix. When you talk about density of the population and what's going in residential wise, I used to think 20 years ago, gosh, we'll never sell all these, there's too many apartments here. I'll never think that again, because they attract more and more people. And the universities help as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that come to the universities that then stay, you know, come and love fall in love with Manchester.
And I think just while we're talking about heritage buildings, this building we're recording this podcast in now is absolutely stunning. I walk past it every day and I just saw the front door, never even considered what was behind it. But essentially we've got a listed building that the developers converted into apartments, but it's almost pods, isn't it? Because
it is. It's the old Freemasons Hall. And this is only half of it. And we're kind of halfway up. The base of this room was lower down. So the ceiling was double the height, even though it's tall now, it was double the height. And because it's listed, nothing was allowed to touch the walls. So they've literally built a pod in the middle of the room. But I think it's amazing. And they had to restore quite a lot of the plaster work and paint work on the walls. So they've done an amazing job on it.
Stunning. And this is a rentals, isn't it? So short-term rentals. And it just made me think about, in terms of your pioneering work that you did with other partners about helping to turn Manchester into a 24-hour city. We're also known as a city, a hen do and a stag do city, aren't we now? And, you know, I came through Ancoats.
Party city.
I was in Ancoats on Friday for a meeting. And, you know, kind of that 5 o'clock time, there's just hundreds of people dragging suitcases across Cutting Square. What are your views on that? Do you think, how's it turned into this party city, would you say?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think because a lot of what's here is the restaurants are here, the bars are here, and we're a friendly city. I think that brings people here. It's a great place to be. The football, we've got two great football teams, and people like to be so close. The football teams are so close to the city that you can enjoy the city and go there. There is so much to do in Manchester. That's the beauty of it. And there's so many varieties of different things. It's bringing a lot of different cultures into Manchester.
And going back to 1994, when there was not so much of that at all, what are the biggest kind of changes that you've seen which have created the city that we've got now, that, you know, all the plaudits we've had recently, Condé Nast, New York Times, Time Out, Lonely Planet, you know, we are the place to visit, aren't we now? So what's the things that stand out most to you in terms of milestones, maybe?
gosh, that's a hard one, really. I mean, when I first started, the Bridgewater Hall wasn't even here. And I was trying to think, actually, today, what wasn't here and what's the difference? Spinning Fields wasn't even here. Actually, where 20 Stories is used to be a Greg's, where I used to go for my lunch. So that's completely changed. The Northern Quarter, there wasn't a lot there until Smithfield Buildings came, and then that changed that area quite considerably. But Great Ancoats, you wouldn't have gone across Great Ancoats Street.
No.
Whereas now, I mean, Ancoats is amazing. Mm-hmm. I think Manchester spread its boundaries, that's the thing that I've noticed, into Hume, Castlefield. Castlefield boundaries certainly got expanded, and it's made Manchester that bit bigger. But when you actually look at Manchester, I think the beauty of the city is that it's not that big a city, and you can walk from one side to the other very easily. Whereas you wouldn't get lost for very long in the city.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely a walkable city. And also Salford with embankment and down all the work that's been done on Chapel Street. Have you noticed the fact that Salford and Manchester, in terms of how they run, you know, their leadership, it's very much more collaborative now, isn't it? Two cities.
Definitely. Joined. And like you say, there's very little difference between the two.
Mm.
You know, when I first started as well, Salford Quays was only just in the making.
Of course. Do you have an office there, didn't you? Did you set an office up?
We did. We had an office at Salford Quays. Yeah. And I have a picture on the wall in our boardroom of the Quays before anything was built on it. I have quite a few. I have a picture of the flyover, which was in front of Quay 103, in front of Castle Quay, and one of Granby Village when it was derelict. And I very often will say to the employees, now, this is Manchester in 94. I wasn't born then. And that really does make me feel old.
But I remember, so the flyover in front of the Quay 103 building at Castlefield, I went to view an apartment there when that flyover was still there. And it's like, you thought, nah, who's going to, if I buy this now, who's ever going to want to buy it again? Mm. And then before you turn around, I can't remember it ever being there really now.
No, it's funny because when I first started, Castle Quay was one of the first ones with Chepstow House refurbs. And Jason Orange from Take That used to own one in there. And he used to call in quite a lot after they'd been out for the weekends into the office. And he asked me to go and have a look at his apartment. So I thought, you know, as a young girl, 23, 24, and Take That wanted me to go and value their apartment. It was an amazing opportunity. And I got there and I was being very professional and talking about the apartment and telling him all about the market. And he sat down and literally interviewed me and started saying, so how long have you been going, and where do you live, and what do you do? And any question he could think of. And all the time that he was interviewing me, there were a million girls outside tying themselves to the railings.
They used to do that. I've forgotten.
They did,
I
didn't
remember.
They?
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So yeah, it was funny.
So, and you must have done lettings or sales to some really kind of well-known people, celebrities, footballers. So has that been a big part of your career?
It has. To start with, when we used to have obviously Granada and the BBC here, and theatre. So we did a lot then. I housed the majority of the Cracker crew when they filmed here. So Robbie Coltrane was one of my first clients. And when I first started, I used to do all the viewings. I used to do everything. So I had my little Fiesta and I'd take him out in my little Fiesta and go and view a property and moved him in. So that was quite good when he actually said to me, just walk out with me, Julie, because we'll get people talking if they see me walking out of an apartment with a blonde. So that was quite funny. But yeah, there's all sorts of people that we've met.
And number one, Deansgate was the first real celeb.
It was.
Haunt, wasn't it?
That brought a lot of people here.
Do you think that probably put us on the map in the first place for that level of luxury at City Centre Living?
It certainly did, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and people didn't think you'd get those prices for the apartments then, but they did, yeah. Mm. That was a real catalyst to luxury, I think. Mm.
You must have been supported and backed by a number of, you know, high-profile developers at the time to get you on the map.
Yeah, I think, they had nowhere else to go, unfortunately. So
you were the first for 3 years,
I was the only one here.
Yeah,
I was the only one here. And when I did get wind that somebody else 3 years on was going to be opening, I made sure that my marketing was top notch and they found it difficult to get into this city. This was my city and they weren't coming in very easily. So I did put up a bit of a fight to make sure that they stayed with me. I think the name just got around really and people just came to me. I was the place to go. And that, I think you forget so many years on that actually we were everywhere. People wanted to talk to me because I was a young girl in an industry that was starting to boom. Did quite a bit of television. I was in the papers. And yeah, it was a busy, busy time.
And 30 years, I mean, that is some stint. So there must have been some like mega challenges along the way, particularly, and I don't know, more then, or you've gone through, you know, the property crash, we've gone through COVID, went through the 2002 recession. So what have you had to deal with?
Oh, we've had to deal with an awful lot. I mean, first of all, when the bomb happened in 96, I actually thought, well, no one's going to want to live in Manchester. It's a city. It's going to be a target that will put people off. But obviously that didn't. That brought more investment into the city. We then had 9/11, where people were obviously scared again. Was high-rise the thing to do? Was high-rise the place to live? And then we had Grenfell. So there's been an awful lot there along the way that have made me think, will people want to live in the city centre? When we had COVID, a lot of people had their apartments wrapped because the cladding was being done. They couldn't go out. They couldn't see out.
Yeah.
So there were some horrendous stories that come out of that. And there's some people that, you know, really were desperate to get out, but then other people actually saw the benefits of it and people were having parties across the street and made some really good relationships from it. So yeah, every cloud has a silver lining and I'm always a type of person that will always look to try to make the best out of a bad situation, and that's what Manchester's all about.
And have you felt that there are any kind of key individuals or organisations who have been there to support you along the way?
Gosh, yes, lots. I mean, yeah. I've had lots of developers that have supported me. And the community itself, really, it's people that live in Manchester that make it. I've been an agency for the first 20 years. We did an awful lot of developments. For the past 10 years, I've kind of looked at it a little bit differently. The people that live here are my bread and butter, and the people that live here need my help. So we've kind of changed our view. The big high rises, we leave that to the big boys. We leave that to the people that want the PRS schemes and the pension schemes. And we look after the community and try to grow Manchester, really.
So give us a snapshot of who's living in Manchester.
Gosh, who's not living in Manchester?
True.
Everybody. What surprises me, and which it makes sense really, is there's a lot of people that live here that are retired, that don't want to have to travel, that want all the amenities close to hand. And they make up quite a big number in the community. A lot of mature students, but very often it's anybody, absolutely anybody. I could not say that it's one type of person that lives in Manchester. The only people I would say perhaps move out, which is a shame, is when people start a family, that they've not got the green space, they've not got the gardens, and they want that for children. But we've got a school now, which is great, and that does help, because in all the European cities, that's how they bring children up and they enjoy the city centre. But yeah, that's probably the one area that misses out a little bit.
And have you got to have a dog?
Well, my dog comes to work with me. But yeah, I mean, it's getting more and more popular all the time.
It is amazing. I mean, I absolutely love it. But you never would have seen a dog in town, would you, 30 years ago?
It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I take my dog everywhere with me at the moment and she's a big fluffy sheep. And people just let her in any shop.
Yeah.
I've been into coffee shops and all sorts with her, and Boots will even let me in, and it amazes me. But I think it's great.
It is amazing. And apparently you can actually take a dog into Selfridges up the escalator as long as you can carry it. So my daughter's got a bulldog, and we can't actually we can't get him up the escalator. But but it's amazing to see so many animals in town. And your family is involved in your business. I absolutely love this. So your son's working with you in the business now.
He is, yes.
How old's he?
He's 23.
Yeah.
He did actually work with me when he first left college, and worked in the property management department and decided he didn't like that and had a break for a few years. And then he's come back to work with me now in the sales, and he's really thriving. He's doing well.
And do you think it's the career for him? Does he think so?
Well, it's early days, but he's doing a good job. I like to keep him on his toes.
And then your daughter, she's a grafter too, like you. And so she's helping you out in the business as well, isn't she?
She is, yeah. I mean, she'll be in here later on cleaning this place. She's actually studying at the moment, and I'm pushing her to study, and she just wants to keep working. But yeah, she is a grafter, and she likes her Airbnbs, and she's looking after this for me, which is great.
I absolutely love that. How have you found running a business and driving a business forward for 30 years in terms of being a mother and being a businesswoman, as you say, as what at the time was an extremely male-dominated sector?
Yeah, it's not been easy, but you just get on with it and then look back afterwards sometimes and think, how on earth did I do that? Yeah, I mean, I had my son 20 odd years ago. So I'd only been going for 10 years, and it was a very, very busy time when I had the children. I remember my mum, who was actually a stay-at-home mum for us, saying, when you have children, you need to be there for them. And that actually made me feel quite guilty that I couldn't do that, because I had a lot of employees that I had to make sure that the business was running and I was looking after them. So I had a nanny that helped me, who actually now works with me. She never left. She didn't want to go and work with anybody else after having any other children. I don't think she wanted to leave. So she carried on working with me and was my PA for many years.
Oh, that's
so that was great. Yeah. So yeah, that was hard. And then the children, I actually say to them now, what do you remember about your childhood? And they say, Mum, we always remember you being late to pick us up. And I tried so hard. I used to let them go to after school club thinking they can have a piece of toast at after school club and I'll pick them up after that. And they used to say, but we never wanted a piece of toast. We just wanted to go home on time. But it was always busy. But I did structure my day so that my day fit around trying to be a mum. And I would go home, have a few hours with them, have tea, and then start working again afterwards. Mm. So I did do an awful lot of work.
I'm breaking the fourth wall here because my son's in the room and it's probably exactly the same for them. And I think my daughter's...
So you asked that question.
I haven't, Alex. But I remember my daughter's first words, I think some of the very first words were, where's my bloody mobile? So it says it all, doesn't it, really? But they're here, you know, we've not seen them off, and we had to do what we had to do. But I totally agree with you. It was, you felt very conflicted a lot of the time. But once you start a business, you can't just stop it, can you?
You
have got responsibilities, and you've got other people's mortgages you've got to make sure that you're looking after. So it comes with,
wheel, aren't you?
Of course you are,
yeah.
I mean, what would you say in that 30 years, some of the things that you're most proud of?
Wow. Getting through it. The last 10 years, I have actually had quite a bad illness called trigeminal neuralgia, which I had for 6 years, which was face pain. And I never had heard of it. And it's quite rare, but it's like having toothache and in every tooth, in every tongue, in every side of your face, and shooting pains that just go through your face. So I struggled a lot with that. Luckily, why I had that, my sister actually started working with me. So she's been my right-hand woman, and I couldn't have carried on without her and the team that I've got. I had to take a lot of medication for that. And eventually I had to have an operation where they cut into my head and put a pack in between a blood vessel and a nerve, which thankfully has worked. But that was a hard slog. But I think I only missed a couple of days' work throughout all of that.
Wow.
But that was hard.
That's awful. I didn't know that. How long ago was that?
I had the operation 2 years ago and I had the illness for 6 years.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
An achievement to get through that. And the thing is, nobody probably other than those people around you would have ever have known that. So you have to show up, don't you, every day?
Yeah.
No matter how you're feeling.
Yeah. I had to stop some conversations when I was on the phone to people and I could feel it coming on.
Really?
But people are understanding. And I had a very, very good, stable team who stayed with me and supported me and nurtured me through it, basically.
And obviously, the way that you create a culture in your organisation, it comes from you. So what would you say are the key ingredients to creating a business that's, has longevity like yours has?
I don't put myself as a hierarchy at all. I like to get to know my staff and I like to understand the staff. And they've got to look out for each other and support each other. And they do that very, very well. Mm-hmm. I think everybody has got to communicate well. And if there's a problem, you talk. If somebody makes a mistake, tell me about it straight away. Mm. Don't hide it. And that's always been my key, really.
Mm. That's similar to one of our values, actually, which is admit it, fix it, move on. I mean, you literally can't avoid making mistakes. And if you're not making mistakes, you're not actually growing, are you? But it's about...
You have to learn from them.
You do.
And learn quick.
And communicate fast when there has been a mistake, but then kind of learn. And you're more powerful, I think, after the mistake than you were before in a lot of cases. Yeah.
What we do find in the business is communication is key with us, because when you're actually talking to a vendor, they could be selling through bereavement, through divorce, through money problems. If someone's renting, it's money. It's people's biggest asset. So you have to be able to adapt to how the clients are and what's going on in their lives. And that's why the estate agents have a bad name. Estate agents are up there with bankers, I think. But we have an awful lot to deal with, really. And you have to have a special kind of way of communicating with people. And that's both with the clients and with your colleagues as well.
That's such an interesting point, and I've not really thought about that before, because as you say, no matter what your personal circumstances, buying or selling a house in particular, or even renting now, because it's so difficult for people to even get accommodations, particularly in the city, this can be such a range of emotions going on with that person.
Oh, it's so stressful.
Really stressful.
Yeah. And now sales are taking so long to go through. Mm. You have to manage people's expectations. And, if people buy a house, they expect to move in a few weeks. And that's one of the big things that I've noticed is we used to, you'll remember when we had the grand, that we used to put a reservation down and exchange within 28 days, obviously complete when the building was finished. Now, to exchange within 28 days, people would say, how on earth are we going to do that? Mm-hmm. Well, you'd think things would have speeded up. Mm-hmm. But exchange can take 3 months now. And those 3 months, people are on tender hooks. They want to organise their lives. They want to move on. And you have to manage that kind of emotion throughout the whole process. Mm-hmm.
So do you teach that within your team? How is that something that you have a conversation?
I teach by example.
Yes. They hear you on the phone.
We do. Yeah, we have to.
There's no doubt about the legacy you've created. The first woman pioneer in the Manchester city centre residential world. And so you've blazed that trail. What do you feel that your legacy, and you kind of look back, and I know you've got way more years than you yet. We've had that conversation. You're not shutting the front door because you've got your new door on Deansgate now. What do you want to be known for in this industry?
I'd like to be known for helping Manchester become a community and to be a living city, really. In 2005, we actually won Estate Agent of the Year. That was a national award, which we never thought that we'd win. And for that, we were the first northern agent to win it and the first female agent to win it. So that was something that I never, ever expected to win, but we did. And I think that gave me the confidence that we'd got that. But yeah, a legacy for being remembered for city centre living would be fantastic.
Well, that leads us into our quick fire round. So what's your favourite building in Manchester?
I would say Chepstow House. It was probably one of the first refurbs that I went in. I got my first employee from there. I got my first client from there, and I now own his property.
Oh, wow. It's a beautiful building. What's about your favourite neighbourhood?
I think it has to be Castlefield. You've got a bit of water there, a bit of outside space.
Mm, yeah, I love it there. What do you order at the Chippy?
Fish, chips and gravy.
And can you give me one sentence to describe Manchester?
I think it's a city of opportunity.
Yeah, perfect. And what do you miss most when you're not here?
The hustle and bustle. You miss everything when you're not in Manchester, don't you?
It's like when you're at the airport somewhere and you're on the plane, you can hear the Manchester accent again. It's always great. Julie, thanks so much for joining me on We Built This City. It's been amazing. You gave us a chance when I just started my business as well. So it was amazing to work back with you all those years ago and to win some awards with you. And, you know, you have created an incredible city here with those, that commitment, that vision that you had as well in 1994 to make Manchester a 24-hour city. Thank you so much for helping us to build the city.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Julie Twist has built the city by believing in city centre living 3 years before anyone else, by helping people and their dogs to make Manchester their home, and by kickstarting a career with a driving crash course in Bangor, in a Bangor. On the next episode of We Built This City, you'll hear from musician and journalist John Robb, and that episode will be available on the 4th of April. Follow the podcast on Instagram at We Built This City Pod to see pictures of all our guests in their favourite places around Manchester. And Julie mentioned property developer Tom Bloxham, and you can listen back to our conversation on the podcast by going back to Manc 32 on the We Built This City feed. This podcast was produced by Purposeful Podcasts. If you want to build a community around your business or your brand, please do get in touch with our amazing team through our website, purposefulpodcast.com. If you'd like to find out more about how Roland Ransfield can help you drive your values and create relationships that build your business success, then head over to rdpr.co.uk. Or you can find us on Instagram at Roland Ransfield or X at rdprtweets. Or feel free to give us a call at the office on the same number we've had for nearly 28 years on 0161 236 1122. And in the meantime, don't forget to rate, review and follow We Built This City. Thank you.